the services of a new school in the David Douglas area. I think this is there's a real obvious trend that we're seeing with growing poverty and growing needs in a number of areas. The cultural diversity that's coming to the area is something that adds a richness to the community, and it also adds some challenges, particularly with the demands on English as a second language, teaching needs, and other complexities and challenges that I think need to be addressed planfully and as a community and school community together. We're seeing proliferation of high occupancy apartments, lack of neighborhood feel, as I think we've heard about this morning, safety issues for children, and also for the growing number of older adults who are living in this area as well. What we have heard from parents that we work with is that they're needing help with accessing resources. They don't have a place to go to find out how to get food stamps, how to get utility assistance, how to get into classes that can help them with learning languages and getting the services that they need. And I would add as well that we're seeing a lack of stable structures that are open after school hours that encourage positive behaviors and skill building so that we're not adding to the number of gangs that are involved in our community that really do not help us create a safe environment. I'd just like to say that David Douglas has a committed group of administrators, teachers, counselors, coaches, parents. It's a vital community that has been remaining very stable during this trying time of a number of issues coming into their area. We not only support the district through this resolution to build a new school, but also we support avenues of community involvement that would exist through this resolution. We find that schools are the best places to gather talent, where we can bring older adults in the community and other citizens in to help our children, and where we can perhaps provide kindergarten readiness classes for children. We can teach financial literacy. We can offer parent education and coaching. All of these would naturally develop out of this resolution. The Portland Vision Community Engagement Report recently stated schools are the best institutions in East Portland. They deal closely with the changing needs of students, and they might be a rallying point for the community. I believe this is a true statement. I think schools are a centering point for communities, and we truly need to build on the strength of our school system in David Douglas for the sake of learning as well as for the sake of the community as a whole.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bob.
My name is Bob Burko. I'm here as a board member of the Rose Community Development Corporation. I wear a lot of other hats or beanies or whatever, depending on what's going on. I've lived embedded in these communities for only 6 months. It's a term that I guess comes out of war journalism. But at any rate, I've been living in a senior housing product that Rose Community Development Corporation developed about a decade ago. It has food service provided by Loaves and Fishes, which is, again, inside that building. It's another nonprofit that you're well aware of. I got asked to join the board because I am a resident of a project like this, and so I've now got a board meeting tonight at something called Leander Court Apartments at 122nd and Foster, which has mostly now low-income but spacious housing for families. So it's got two providers of child care services. It hosts some Somali families in some relationship with Multnomah County court system. It's doing all kinds of varied things to really integrate housing with children and social services. And as Mr. Leonard invited you to come out and see something, I invite anybody who hasn't come out to Leander Court at 122nd and Holgate to see some of the beginnings of when you put the kids and the low-income housing together. Then you can partner from there with the elementary schools nearby with some programs, and that's one of the reasons I'm really here supportive of this main proposal. But the other side of it is the integrative nature of the rest of the community, not just the kids. And I've been scurrying around much of the community for the last 4 or 5 months trying to find intergenerational opportunities. So you don't have kid ghettos, next to old people ghettos, next to drug things and all the other stuff you hear about. How do you find a way on a consistent basis to get a mix of the people in your neighborhood together, working together? And I think that the community part of what we're talking about is extremely important. And you're the folks that introduced me to it, because I went out to the Menlo Park Elementary School to the first hearing on roads, and then I went out to the Park Rose High School to the hearing on streetcars. So in each case, the City of Portland transportation people got me into a community use of an elementary school or a high school. Worked really well. I called up, went back and met with the principal and said, tell me more about the schools. And so I think you have to be a bit conscious of the opportunity you have to just make invitations to the rest of your community to use these facilities. And you've got some wonderful ones that are starts, and I'm as supportive as I can be about this.
Great, thanks. Any questions for the panel? Thank you so much. And that concludes the invited testimony. Mayor, I did think it would make sense next to I know the majority of the PDC commission is here, as is Executive Director Bruce Warner, and I didn't know if they would like to make any comments at this point. I'm getting a no from Executive Director Warner, and okay. Let's not say you didn't have the chance. So we'll open up for public testimony.
How many folks have signed up for public testimony?
We have six people.
Okay, please call the first three.
First three are Michael Egan, John May, and Allison Riggs. They'll be followed by Jefferson Smith, Judy Chin, and Marie Roberts.
And you can get that microphone, although I don't know that I need a microphone.
You need it for the TV audience.
Yeah.
We can hear you.
Thank you.
Before you begin, let's thank you, folks, for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
My name is Michael Egan. I know many of you. You see me frequently, and usually I'm speaking in behalf of someone else or someone else's needs. Today, I need to put a personal face on this. In the David Douglas School District, we're facing a dire crisis. We have the lowest economic base in the entire county. And so, as you've heard, we can't afford to pass a bond issue. It doesn't mean we don't care, but we can't afford this. I see this as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to provide needed class rooms. We also can provide badly needed public space. Mayor Potter keeps promising me a community center, a one-stop service center, and this is one way that he can make good on that promise. And as the lady already pointed out, we've asked, how are the kids? And part of the answer to that depends on you. But the personal face on this is, my wife and I are raising our grandchild. He has appeared before you, Elijah Taylor. I'm proud to say that he's part of a tremendous school system. The teachers are great. The kids are great. Elijah himself is maintaining a B-plus average. He plays football. He wrestles. He does track. He plays in two bands, and by the way, he's one of the 73% that qualify for the free lunch program. So the fact that David Douglas can do this with their students, in spite of the fact that we're bursting at the seams, I just want to ask you, and I know that you've already supported it, to have the courage that if you face threats of legal challenges, that you bite the bullet and go ahead and deal with those legal channels and dispose of them, because we really need this. Thank you.
My name is John May. I live on Southeast 140th Avenue, just north of Powell Boulevard. I'm here to tell you today how much I appreciate your willingness to think outside the box and to act creatively with reference to this proposed urban renewal district expansion. I've lived at the same outer southeast Portland address for 22 years. And during that time, I've watched the area change from what I would call lower middle class semi-rural and suburban to become predominantly urban with growing levels of poverty. Unfortunately, this shift has also brought increased levels of crime and blight. According to the city's own 2005 citizen survey, my neighborhood and those around me are among the most poorly maintained, poorly planned, and unsafe of any of the 95 neighborhoods in the city. The 2000 survey is not yet published, but I would imagine it will show similar results. During the past 8 years or so, I've been involved as a citizen with my local David Douglas School District on many volunteer projects and committees, including bond election campaigns and advisory committees. What I've learned about the school district is that they haven't experienced an unfortunate coincidence of enrollment growth and growing poverty. This combination of rapidly increasing population with very low assessed property value has stressed the district's ability to house students well beyond what is reasonable. Their most recent effort to pass a construction bond in 2006 failed by a significant margin, and the likelihood of a turnaround in their near future seems remote at best under the current circumstances. I'm not afraid of diversity in neighborhoods and schools. I believe that diversity in schools are an advantage, not a hindrance, in preparing young people for the realities of the future. But this area of the city is reaching a breaking point in terms of pressure on its infrastructure, and it is time for the city to recognize that and consider actions like the unusual proposal currently here today. In the absence of a civic center or even a commerce hub, school buildings tend to provide a gathering point and a sense of community for neighborhoods. This proposed development could help fill that void in outer East Portland. Thank you for your time this morning.
Good morning. My name is Allison Riggs. I am a resident in outer southeast Portland. I live off of 123rd and Holgate, and I have two children that attend Gilbert Heights Elementary. I feel that the council should issue funds to the David Douglas School District for the new Southside Elementary School. I believe this because the population growth in our district caused by zoning changes and infill housing had brought us to the point where without some relief, our children's educational future will begin to deteriorate. I do realize that for a city to grow, we do need places for people to live. However, when density is achieved without expanding the quantity of educational services, it creates an overwhelming burden on our schools, on our teachers, and on our children. As I look at our neighborhood and see all the new homes, current building, and future lots, I realize the number of families that are on the way. I have to ask you, how do you expect the David Douglas School District to educate the children of these Portland families? As a parent, a community member, and a volunteer who has been in my children's classrooms every week for the last 5 years, I'm telling you, there is no room for the families yet to come. We are full now. I'm asking you, help relieve this burden. Give us the funding for our new school. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
The next three are Jefferson Smith, Judy Chin, and Marie Roberts.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Jefferson Smith. I live on 116th and Pacific. When I was in Grant High School, graduated in 1991, Grant High School had about 1,600, 1,700 students. David Douglas, where one of my good friends' fathers taught, had about the same number of students. At that time, they had about 30 to 40% of the students on free or reduced price lunch. Now that ratio is doubled, and now David Douglas High School has nearly 3,000 students. So if you look at that growth, more than they grew, but every ounce of that growth was essentially in low-income and low-middle-income households. If you continue that for a generation, you're Cabrini-Green. It is not a recipe for social justice to increase density and decrease income over a long period of time. Put this in the context of an annexation in the late 80s and early 90s by this city that was deemed unconstitutional by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, but without remedy stuck. Add that to a context of a place that has 21 out of 31 of Portland's high accident intersections, even though it only houses about 21 or 22% of the population, where crime is down in TriMet citywide, but it is up east of 82nd. My first point here is that Outer East Portland has the potential to be this city's single biggest failure at the turn of this century. Concomitantly, it also offers our best chance for making strides in our quest to be, as a city, a paragon of social justice. Investing in this part of town is at the highest priority. That includes safety in the max, maybe offering visible tickets and watchful greeters. It includes distributing low-income housing and not merely segregating it where we don't have to park when we go to a Blazer game. It means managing traffic and building sidewalks on arterials. It means building amenities and parks as promised during the annexation fights. And it means schools to help deal with the people who live there and perhaps to attract the young families that might increase the balance in the area. In any event, I will wrap early and merely say I applaud the city's efforts. I think given this, maybe the city's biggest challenge, using creative means is not only justifiable but probably necessary. And I hope you guys will not stop here but will continue. And please continue. Thanks.
So can I ask a question, Mayor?
Certainly.
Jefferson, you're running for state representative in that area?
Yes, I am.
And is my information correct that at 5 o'clock yesterday at the close of filing deadline, nobody filed to run against you in the primary or the general election?
That is true, which makes it clear I am not here merely looking for votes.
Yes. I don't want you.
Although it was scheduled when I was looking for votes, but I decided not to cancel.
Well, you are a lawyer and now officially a politician, so that wasn't my question.
Okay.
My question I was going to ask you is, do you think it was because I endorsed you that nobody?
Yes. I do believe it was because of that.
Well, congratulations. It'll
Thanks
be
very
wonderful
much. Appreciate
have you
that.
Advocating for East Portland in the legislature.
Thanks very much.
Hello. My name is Judy Chin. I am the PTA president at Gilbert Park Elementary School in the David Douglas School District. First of all, I want to thank the city council and the mayor for passing the resolution to annex our Deerdorf property to build our new, much-needed school. As you have heard everybody else's testimony, we are bursting at the seams. Gilbert Park, I believe, has the largest enrollment of all of our elementary schools. We had our PTA meeting yesterday, and our principal told us that we have 560 children in our building. That's 23 classrooms with anywhere from 29 to 30-plus children in a classroom. I'm new to the district. My daughter has only been in school for 3 years. Kindergarten year, she had 33 kids in kindergarten. 33. That's an astronomical number of kids in one classroom. My son will start kindergarten next year. We were told yesterday that all of our kindergartners are going to be removed out of our building and put into another building for space reasons. That means my children will not be able to be going to school together for my son's first year. I think that's very crucial to have a child not be able to be in their elementary school where they live. And our school is very much needed. So thank you.
Hi, my name's Marie Roberts, and I, too, have grandchildren that are in the Gilbert Park Elementary School. We are bursting at the seams, indeed. And one thing that keeps us going, and I have been so pleased to hear everybody in support of this, and I keep glancing over at Mr. Leonard because you surprised me today. Thank you so much. And
that's what I do.
Okay. And I was very pleased to hear what you had to say. The school is very well needed. We not only have an issue right now with bursting at the seams, and our parents do try and keep it together. It's not that we are uncaring. We have over 1,300 volunteer hours in our school alone this year. We have, with the teachers being so overstretched with the number of kids, we have parents that come in and volunteer for all of our extracurricular activities. We have a very involved base. It's not that the bond issue failed because of non-caring. It failed because our people were unable to see their way clear to vote for it. We supported and paid into the Multnomah County tax, and that went to help fund projects within the city of which David Douglas School District didn't receive any benefit. The bond issue came right on the heels of that coming right afterwards, and so it was like, do we want another tax in here? Because we didn't get any benefit from that one, and now I'm going to be able to increase my pocketbook just a little bit, and it wasn't there. We adhere to the urban growth boundaries, and we have so many of our families now were single or properties where our single family dwellings on large properties are being removed and apartments are going in. So you can say that where we had one family before, we now have 20 families conservatively living there, and all of those kids are going into our school district. And it is very well needed. Thank you so much, Mr. Stein, for your innovative approach, and thank you for all your consideration and hopefully giving us the well-needed school that we really do need. Thank you.
Thanks, thank you, folks.
That's all who signed up.
Great. Did anybody else want to testify?
Please state your name for the record.
Pete Colt, Alphabet District. I have to say that I agree with my neighbors in the David Douglas School District. The neighborhood that I live in really has so many infrastructure benefits that they're lacking. Commissioner Sten, does that mean that I should run for office now?
Yeah,
I'm all about, and Commissioner Adams, thank you for turning your eye to the east side with 82nd Street and putting in infrastructure, traffic signals, crosswalks, things of that nature. I think what I'm up here to say is this also. As you build new schools, I contacted Carol Smith last week and asked her to get with the transportation department because I think it would be beneficial. The old saying is measure twice, cut once. I'm of the mind, measure twice, build once. When we build these schools for David Douglas and on the east side, I think at the same time we should also be building the streetcars to run right there, so that our kids will have a safe way to go to school. They should run almost virtually to the entrance of each of these schools. So you really are what the Oregonian says. You're a statesman there. You had a tear in my eye when you were talking earlier. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
On that note, we'll...
I did not pay him to say that.
There are others...
I had a tear in my eye, but it was allergies.
There are others who will dispute that on future agenda items. Stick around.
Okay. There's no further testimony. Please call the vote.
Adams?
I want to thank Commissioner Sten and the Portland Development Commission for their leadership on this issue. Nothing is more important to Portlanders than the... successful schools in every neighborhood that ensure that every child has access to an excellent public education. It is simply the cornerstone of a civic foundation of a successful society. And while the City Council cannot ensure each child gets a superior education, it's beyond our legal reach. We can help ensure facilities are in place to create the environment for that superior education. While I support this important step, it is just a first step to ensure that every school in Portland can meet Portlanders' appropriately high yet entirely reasonable expectations for the quality of education provided to their children. All five school districts deserve the creative support of City Council, and this is an important first step in meeting a citywide expectation Portlanders have for us as a City Council, and I'm very pleased to vote aye.
Leonard.
I'm a fourth-generation Oregonian, born and raised in Portland, lived here all my life, gone to Portland schools, Portland State University, worked for the Portland Fire Bureau. I'm on the Portland City Council. I don't think you get much more Portland than I do, so I hope people will forgive me for what I'm going to say. We, as a state, are sad in terms of how we view education and investments in education. It is sad for me to have read some of what I read over this current debate about whether or not it was appropriate to use these dollars to build a school for public education. I would point you back across the oceans to one of the homelands of my forefathers, Ireland, and their ideas with respect to education. They have made college free in Ireland, and they did that not as a social for a social reason, but for an economic development reason. They decided that they were lagging behind the rest of Europe and Asia and much of the world in economic development, and the primary reason was they weren't educating their kids to the level that they could compete on the world market. They opened up college and invested in kids, and they are now one of the leading economic powerhouses in the world. We have a lot to learn in this state about what it means to actually pull our kids up by their bootstraps, give them the chances to succeed, and this initiative today is an example of how you do that. This initiative today is a small example of exactly how you do that. You consider building schools, providing more teachers, more money for education, not as an expense, but an investment, because that's exactly what it is. And folks, we are losing as a state and a country on the international stage in terms of competing for jobs, for industry, to other countries who have figured out this simple little formula I'm describing to you. And that is, you make investments in kids to compete, and then you draw industry, you draw jobs, you draw investment, you draw wealth, and most of all, you draw a sense of worth. And I am very, very pleased to actually be in a position to support something that I think is one of the first initiatives to do just that since I've been in public life, and that is investing in a school in probably the area of the state that needs it the most to create opportunities for kids who otherwise were lost. So, again, thank you, Commissioner Stan, for this great initiative. Thank you for your vigorous work on it, and I'm really pleased and proud to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Stan for his leadership on this, and I also want to thank the David Douglas school board, the superintendent, and the many, many hardworking faculty and staff who deal with this conundrum of stress on the facilities that you have to provide. And you're doing a great job providing a real quality education, but there comes a limit, and the forces that are working against you in terms of low assessed values, migration to your district from inner Portland, this is the solution, or a solution, that Commissioner Stinn has found here so that we can invest in your future and in the future of your students. I think it's long overdue. I think this is an opportunity. It's a unique opportunity, and I think it's really going to serve not only David Douglas residents and their kids well, but it's going to serve the entire city of Portland. So I'm pleased to support this and happy to vote aye.
Stinn?
I want to briefly thank folks in my office, Jamal, who's been on the lead for helping us get this through, the city attorney's office, the mayor's office, and I just wanted to single out and thank the PDC commission and their staff. This has been a new way of thinking and a tricky one for them, and I think they've really taken the approach, which I appreciate, that this is a policy decision that the council needs to think through and that they will then implement, and I think that's the right way to look at it. I also think that I won't restate this because I won't do it as eloquently what many of the community members, Superintendent Rommel, have said about how important this facility is. I think it's – I really, Randy, appreciate your words and the points that you're making. I think that trying to tie these things into other ways of thinking, because there's always this thing about, well, we've got all this money, but the box doesn't allow us to spend it on our highest and best needs. And this is a way to try and push through this. But I also think – that this, over the next 10 or 20 years, will serve the Portland Development Commission very well, because I think it will begin to build the support that is lacking from the broader community, because people don't understand what the Portland Development Commission does. I don't think it's because they're against how it's done, but they just see it as something different than what it actually is. And I think as kids get pushed out of the inner city, which really is the nexus between the River District and David Douglas, I believe unless we take these kind of steps, there's going to be increasing pressure not to do urban renewal districts. And I think in the long run, those will ultimately not work. I also think it's been tougher than we would have thought to do the urban renewal districts that we've done in the lower income neighborhoods. And so tying the urban renewal districts that are wildly successful, because places like the River District not only can support density, they want it. They can create a lot of taxes to the places where people don't necessarily need or want that density, begins to create an unusual alliance. So I'm quite confident that this will bode very well for the Portland Development Commission and people beginning to understand it. I think the amount of support, goodwill, and understanding in the David Douglas School District, which, again, people don't realize is 100% in the city limits, that the Portland Development Commission will now hold is probably, you know, exponentially more than it would have ever been imagined. I do want to end by saying that I see this as one initiative in a broader strategy that we've been calling schools family housing. And the idea is that the school districts, the schools themselves, even though we all care about them, when you really look at it, are working in a little bit of a vacuum, and what they're doing is not well enough tied into particular housing strategies. This is where this started. We think housing price is why David Douglas is coming apart at the seams and Portland Public School District is closing schools. So that makes sense to tie our housing policies, to tie our city efforts, and there are conversations underway, and I want to be really clear about it. I thought it was remarkable and admirable to see the Park Rose superintendent here supporting David Douglas getting this investment. And the point is, I expect from conversations with everybody involved that what we want to do as a community is apply this kind of innovative thinking and this kind of determination to the unique problems of each of the five school districts, and to come back with strategies year after year that can try and do the same kind of work. Can't do a satellite district everywhere. We can probably do a couple more satellite districts in the years ahead, but we can come up, I think, with an equally innovative strategy where we cannot do satellite districts to make sure that the schools have the facilities they need. So I think this is a first step, is the most needed step, but just a first step in what I see as a much broader strategy to work with the schools. So, Mayor, thanks for all the time this morning, and obviously I'm very, very delighted and pleased to vote aye.
Potter.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Stan, for your leadership. I think this is one of those issues that are going to be reverberating into the future for the betterment of our community and particularly the betterment of our children. I want to thank the Portland Development Commission, who is here this morning with their executive director, for their work on this issue in terms of satellite urban renewal areas, and to the David Douglas School District. When I was campaigning, I visited several of the school districts in Portland, and I found that David Douglas was one of the best-run school districts in the state of Oregon. And so with the money that they have and their great staff and superintendent, I think they do a tremendous job. This particular decision will certainly help David Douglas become even better and position their children more effectively for the future. So I want to thank everybody, and I look forward to working to ensure that this is fully implemented in the future. I vote aye. We'll now move to the regular agenda. Okay, folks, just let me remind you that if you want to show your support, please wave your hand in the air. I've allowed a couple of these are very significant events, and I appreciate your support and enthusiasm. Please read item 332.
Authorize $242,000 for capital improvements at 11 Northwest 5th Avenue for women's homeless shelter and create space for 12 new drug and alcohol treatment beds at 30 Southwest 2nd Avenue.
Mr. Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Potter and colleagues. I'm going to pass out a substitute resolution. The substitute resolution at the request of OMF has been amended to add the words on the first line after the word authorize up to, and then in the second to the last resolved on the first line up to $242,000. So would you like to adopt that now and then have the discussion?
Do I hear a motion?
You moved it.
Second. I move. Yeah.
Second.
Call the vote.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Stan.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye.
So I have Officer Jeff Myers. Can you come forward, Bill Sennett and Sergeant Matt Ingen? Mayor and Council, as you know, we and the mayor is, and my work on Project 57 in the fall bump, we added some funds for additional capacity for treatment beds. What we discovered after we added those dollars is that there were no actual physical treatment beds available, and we were doing, Ty, why don't you come forward as well? And what we ended up finding out that we were doing was looking as far away as Medford. to have treatment beds for the offenders that were trying to get into treatment, and obviously that didn't serve us well. Officer Myers identified an opportunity here in the community that it resulted in this resolution today, and it's the building at 11 Northwest 5th that will allow the Salvation Army's Harbor Light Women's Shelter to move from its current location at 20 Southwest 2nd. If we do the capital improvements at 11 Northwest 5th, Salvation Army will be able to move that very successful women's shelter, expand the operation to 11 Northwest 5th, and as a result, they'll be able to serve more women, both with emergency shelter and being able to help transition them into permanent housing. What that move does then is open up the site on at 20 Southwest 2nd, which then the Volunteers of America will be able to move into creating 12 treatment beds that will then be the other half of the Project 57 strategy, which is, as you recall, to create jail beds to put people into and then give them an opportunity to go into treatment. These particular beds, these 12 beds, which will be run by the Volunteers of America, are really for amongst the most violent offenders in the community. They're exponentially more violent than those we've been treating up to now. We don't expect the outcome to be any different than this fabulous outcome that we've experienced as a result of Project 57, where we've seen a 71% drop in recidivism amongst the top 300 offenders in Portland. It has been very successful. I think Mayor Potter and I are both very, very pleased with the result of this excellent work. This piece will allow us to do the remodeling. This $242,000 will allow us to do the remodeling to make the various moves and get the treatment beds up and running. So do any of you want to add anything? Is there anything I've left out?
Jeff Myers of the Portland Police Bureau. The only thing, Commissioner, is actually the group that we're servicing is 409 instead of 300, and the recidivism rates have been reduced amongst that entire population.
Great. Thanks.
And I'd like to add that as folks who are aware of the crime problem in Portland understand completely, is that 70 to 80% of the people being booked into Multnomah County Jail have one or more illegal drugs in their system at the time of arrest. And so the theory behind this is if you we have tried the enforcement of this, and we do have a provision for putting people into a jail bed, but the real secret is to work with the drug-addicted people who are caught committing the crimes and putting them in a position where they are forced to seek treatment. And the experience there has been very positive. As it's been stated, the recidivism has dropped dramatically. That is, those people who have been in treatment recommitting crimes has dropped significantly. And so I see this not only as a program for Old Town, but for our city. And I think that other cities may want to emulate at some point, since drugs tend to drive crime in most cities, that this kind of program actually has more value in terms of reducing crime and getting folks off of their drug habits than just about anything else that I've seen. So it's very effective, and it's very much appreciated. You folks want to have some opening statements?
They're just here to answer questions okay. In case any questions came up. So. Doesn't appear to be any.
Well, I have a question or two. I think I want to bring up Casey Short to talk about. Again, I don't have any. This is like last week. My concern about purchasing a software system out of contingency rather than doing it in the ordinary budget process. I guess I have the same question here. Why is this a contingency item? I mean, we're doing our budget process. I'm not going to ask you that.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I mean, I'll ask.
Okay.
I mean, I'll phrase the question. That's the question. And I want to know, what is the current status of our contingency and also the spring bump, which was alluded to last week, too. And I guess if we should be bringing forward initiatives now that are going to be funded from a spring bump, you know, what is the resource amount in the spring bump?
Maybe I can let you answer the latter part. Let me answer the first part first. Why this now? In the fall bump, as you recall, we authorized $800,000. Was it $800,000?
Nearly that.
To expand Project 57 to include these offenders. And we believed when we expanded that amount to $800,000 that all of us supported, that that was going to give us the money necessary, according to the numbers Volunteers of America gave us, to put those particularly difficult folks into treatment. What we discovered, however, is there's just a lack of treatment beds. So this came up as the strategy to be able to actually create the beds, and that is to actually go in, remodel the Southwest second site, which involved having then Salvation Army move from there to another site that that we could then have the Volunteers of America occupy. So this was an unforeseen circumstance that has stopped us from moving forward with phase two, if you will, of the treatment part of Project 57 with Volunteers of America. So it's I can't explain it other than it was an extenuating circumstance we didn't foresee when we came forward in the fall bumper. We would have asked for the money at that time.
Are you planning on bringing more contingency requests between now and when we adopt the budget?
Do I have to answer that on the record?
Yes.
Not that I can recall at this point in time.
Not that I can recall. Well, you know, I guess, like I said, it just strikes me that there's one budget process that four of us are involved in, and there's a separate budget process that you're undertaking here, and I don't think that's right. This, you know, like last week, the software system, $300,000 sounds meritorious on its, you know, when considered in a vacuum, but when considered against all the other competing priorities, I think that's the way it should be. This sounds like a great project too, but I guess I want to ask Casey, what is the current status of our contingency fund? What is the, I guess this is a $242,000 draw, so what, where are we left after this? And then tell us about the spring bump.
The general fund contingency, as it currently stands, that the general part of it is $8.6 million, of which $4,325,000 is reserved for other things, including police overtime, Park Block 5. There's an Oaks Bottom project that was reserved in the budget, and $1.5 million for a loan to the business license surcharge fund if that's needed for money to pay the schools. It's, it's a cash flow thing. So that leaves about $4.25 million unspoken for in the general fund contingency. And if you back out the $275,000 the council committed to last week for the secondhand dealers, that brings it just below $4 million. The status of the spring bump, what people are going to ask for, I don't know at this point.
What's the resource forecast for the spring bump?
Well, there is no additional resource forecast. If there are additional general fund dollars needed that bureaus need to avoid over expenditures, which is generally what you're going to get in the spring bump because it's the end of the fiscal year and you don't need money to do something for the coming week, the source of any funds there would be the general fund contingency. And I just don't know what the level of that is going to be.
So are you telling me that unlike the fall bump where we had, you know, considerable surplus resources that we spent, we're not going to have that situation in the spring bump?
Correct. That's the same as it is every year. The fall bump, if there is additional money, it largely comes from money that was higher, that you started the year with more than we anticipated in the budget process. Conversely, if you run into bad economic times, you might have less money in the fall bump and you find yourself having to cut shortly after you've done a budget. We haven't had to do that in the 3 years I've been here, but that can happen, and I believe it has happened in the past. The difference, the principal, the major difference between the fall budget adjustment and the spring one is the fall catches up from last year. You see what you really started the year with. You see whether there are additional revenues or reductions in revenues that you got. And if there's additional money, the council can do with it as it sees fit. In the spring, it's primarily a matter of catching up with what you've done over the course of the year, moving money from one place to another to account for some places that have overspent and some that have underspent.
And then the police overtime reservation and the contingency, does that include money for likely presidential candidate visits?
It could. I mean, the council can use that for whatever is necessary. Last year, the police bureau did not need to tap into that $1.8 million that was set aside in contingency. I think if you've got that reserve set there and you don't need it, it essentially becomes available for whatever purpose you choose, either to fund something going on in the current year
or to carry it forward to the next year so you've got it available going through the whole budget process or the fall bump process, depending on when it comes available.
Thanks. I guess my last question is the issue of whether the Salvation Army complies with our equal benefits ordinance. I think we've had that issue come up before under our winter shelter, and so are they going to comply?
Commissioner, I think I can answer that and some parts of your other concerns. First of all, yes, they do comply, and they have in the past. In terms of the impetus behind this and why it didn't come forward in the fall bump, essentially the county had acquiesced, and to some degree the mayor and council had, that there was no brick and mortar available or no capacity to do additional treatment beds. That's why our original ask was for $262,000 in the fall bump. Mayor and council authorized $131,000 simply because they didn't think that there was going to be the capacity. The stars aligned after January 1st, and we found an opportunity, a very unique opportunity, where Salvation Army was planning a move from their present building. The building's for sale. We saw an opportunity to move a very effective and very successful women's shelter facility that has been, in terms of the old shelter philosophy, was to stagnate, have people coming in, and they were stagnating. This program, moved forward by both Commissioner Leonard and Commissioner Sten, we're bringing people in at the back end, and we're moving them out into permanent housing through case management. So this is a very successful program. We saw an opportunity to move it to a new location and not only move it intact, but we had the ability to expand for future capacity from 34 up to 60. And in addition, have the Women's Access Center in the front, where not only would it take care of the women that are in the program during the day, but we'd have additional capacity to bring women out from the rest of the community. And that's been funded as well by the SAFE group. And
so are you telling me that when they sign the contract, or we sign the contract, they're going to provide an addendum that says they're in full compliance with the city's equal benefit?
Well, I'm not sure that that's accurate.
Not sure that's accurate either.
I'm not sure that it is, unless something's happened very recently.
That's what
recently.
You said.
Well, what we've done is we contracted with them. In fact, we have other contracts. The men's winter shelter, we've historically contracted with them. And, in fact, we're in contracts with them right now. It was my understanding that there wasn't a concern over those issues with Salvation Army. They were compliant.
And I was told when I raised this issue earlier that they were in compliance. So I think Jamal was an expert on this.
It's tricky. The last I visited it, which is not recently, they're not in compliance. BHCD has, and I think with the knowledge of the city council, from time to time, contracted with one of their subsidiaries who does comply. And I think I remember actually having a conversation with Commissioner Adams explicitly about this. It's a tricky situation. They have their point of view, and we've been trying to find a way to, on the baseline necessary services. I do think it does raise a question when you expand with them. What we've mostly done is their historical roles, and so I'm not really taking a hard position on this. Maybe they found a way to comply. I don't know that they have.
So that's a useful question, Commissioner Salzman. So this is an expansion of a part of their program that is not compliant, or we just don't know?
This is not, this that you're looking at here is not an expansion of the existing program, but it offers the opportunity for expansion, which wouldn't occur until the next budget year. The facility offers them the opportunity to serve a higher number of women because of the way it's arranged and its size.
So is the program that we have the opportunity to expand next year in compliance or not with EBO?
Well, I'd understood what was described here, which is that some local steps that they took to become into compliance with our issue the first time this was raised, when the women's shelter issue was brought up, either last November or the November before. I'm not sure the details of how the contract.
Well, the women's contract in particular goes through, I think it's Rose Haven.
Commissioner, I believe it's Women's West.
All right. No, you absolutely said the right option. Right? It's Women's West Women's Shelter, yes. Which is a separate nonprofit who is in compliance, but is affiliated with Salvation Army. if this is through that same group, then it is in compliance.
And Commissioner, it is, and in fact, it's an intact program that is budgeted through the fiscal year, and we would be moving it, in essence, right now at its capacity that we have now, and in the next budget cycle, it'll be up to you whether you wish to maintain it at its current capacity, or you have the essentially the ability to expand it if you see a need.
So this contract for construction will be through West Women's Shelter. They will be the fiscal agent signatory to the contract?
Yeah, it'll be Commissioner.
We'll provide the statement of compliance with the Equal Benefits Ordinance.
We'll commit to making sure that whoever the contract ultimately gets executed with after the money is authorized is in compliance. I mean, I think that's a fair request of us. And
They will sign the certification. Is that what you're committing to? Whoever.
Well, yeah, I mean, however we've been able to execute contracts with the organizations that provide women's emergency shelter to have them in compliance, I think it's a fair statement that whatever we do to distribute monies in that regard is in compliance with our policies.
And who's signing the contract on behalf of the city?
It would be either the Police Bureau or the Bureau of Human or Housing and Community Development.
Mr. Salzman, it would be BHCD.
Yes, it is. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And so I think, I don't know where I'm going with this, which is dangerous, but I think the council needs to give some thought to, you know, how it wants to handle the ordinance in this place. I mean, it's adopted city policy, and I think there probably is a reasonable person's distinction between it's November, you need a place for women to go. The Salvation Army has one. You come up with essentially a reasonable workaround on the argument versus you build the system with them if they're not willing to do it. You know, and I think I don't know what the right answer to that is, but I think it needs some explicit discussion.
Of course, in this instance, we're just moving their location.
Right.
Our actual work here is to create treatment beds with the Volunteers of America. I mean, we're not actually entering into an agreement per se with Salvation Army for anything. We're just facilitating a move so we can get the current space they're in.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think in November of last year, and again, I'm not taking a position that implies we shouldn't do this. I'm just saying I think there is a problem with the Equal Benefits Ordinance here. And
I agree, and I'm just saying that's a separate issue from this. I mean, we should take that up when it comes up again.
I think where it starts to be implied here, again, you know, just something that needs to be thought through, is that we're taking, I think, what was probably more of an emergency role and moving it into sort of at least a multi-year strategy until we get to the access center. And I think that all makes a lot of sense, but it probably needs to be directed.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree with that.
And I just to clarify, and I think we're probably on the same page, Commissioner Stinn, but if there are short-term extingencies, that's one thing, but sort of permanent workarounds, I would be very reluctant to greenlight those for anybody.
Yeah, I guess I would be reluctant too, and I'm not fully satisfied that we're not working around it or parsing words to get around it. But I don't think we're going to answer those questions any further. I appreciate the commitment that the contract will have a signed compliance statement with our Equal Benefits Ordinance by whoever the contract signatory is. And I take that on the record and take that as faith. And I believe that's the understanding we have.
And I commit to that.
Thanks.
Thanks, folks. Any further questions? Do we have anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
We have one person signed up, Teresa Teeter.
I like your buttons, Teresa.
It's for you, for today. Green box. Council members, Teresa Teeter, downtown advocate. I was a former employee of Volunteers of America in 1998-99, and I've read through the resolution, and there's a real strict compliance with having been overnight residential counselor with the program where you get drug tested. When you come in the door, like after a weekend, you're paired up with people during the day to be out on the street, and if they see you go for a payphone and you're calling your old hookups for drugs, et cetera, you get told on as soon as you get back to the facility. The concerns I have is, from listening to this, you don't really know who's going to run this other than Volunteers of America, but there's discussion back and forth about Salvation Army, and you're needing to use the facility in an emergency in the winter. And if you have women locked into a strict program like we had at that time, I'm not sure how they're doing it now, but if you have to bring women in off the street in emergency that are using or drunk and blend them in with this strict program, you're going to kind of mess things up. I don't know if you're following what I'm saying, but this all sounded confusing, like this isn't really well thought out right now, but the budgetary process is in a facility. I'm concerned about how it's being run. And in light with what the Portland Tribune wrote today, the front page about this thing being run by Cascadia, there's no oversight in the front lobby. People are coming in at the first of the month with their booze and their drugs because they got their Social Security check. And nobody's doing UAs and saying, well, you're not on your program, out of here. If you don't want to get well, you're just wasting our money. I don't want to see you guys keep throwing good money after bad all the time. This is city tax dollars. So it sounds like you need a work session on how this is going to be running, who's going to be running it, and what's going to happen in the wintertime when you need an emergency location for women that are out on the street using, et cetera. Like I'm saying, you don't want to mix up people getting well with people seriously sick. Thank you.
That's all who signed up.
Is there anybody here who wishes to testify to this matter that hasn't?
Hello again, guys. Pete Colt, Alphabet District. Back in autumn last year, I was walking down Everett, and right there on 19th and Everett, I was going to put a little bit of money in a woman's purse, and she looked up, and she was severely beaten. I mean, she was really beaten to a pulp. And homeless woman, drunk. She had been gang raped throughout the evening right on Trinity's property, where there was a homeless camp set up there with blue plastic things. They had brought her back there and gang raped her and beat her. I tried to get her, you know, to Good Sam. She collapsed, called 911. Officer Larry McNabb showed up, who, by the way, I'd love to have him, please, do a foot patrol in our neighborhood. Him and Sue Abrahamson, great people, outstanding police. Long story short, I had got her parents' phone number from her before the paramedics arrived. I was able to call them. She called again from Lloyd Center. I went over there, found her, got her into another program, was able to get her home to California. She's now in Corvallis. It's really important that we have a shelter for these women. And I think what I'm trying to say is this, that in terms of the prostitution in this neighborhood that I'm in, one of the things we could do maybe when we I'm really asking you to reestablish the prostitution-free zone is rather than exclusion, maybe say you need to go into treatment and you have to give them an X amount of time that they're in treatment. I agree with this woman who said that it's probably not a good idea to mix people who are really serious about a program with people who are coming in from a shelter off the streets. That's what I have to say about that. And again, oh, the graffiti abatement. I didn't have a chance to say that. Thanks, Marcia Dennis. Thanks for watching Our Money. That's twice now you've done that I'm here. So I think the women's shelter is a really important thing. I think that these prostitutes deserve that treatment, just as the kids in our neighborhoods deserve to. I can't stress this enough. When I found out that in the fifth grade, these kids are allowed to walk off campus at the Metropolitan Learning Center and walk around this neighborhood, walk around Cooch Park, walk around Everett without any adult supervision, how frightening that is to me. So any way that we can get these women off of the streets and get them into treatment would be a good thing. So thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you. Please call the vote.
Adams?
I appreciate the conversation around the city's EEO requirements and EBO requirements, and also acknowledge and appreciate the commitment that whoever gets this contract, that they'll be in compliance with both. I want to support this enthusiastically, and I want to this is your lucky day, getting another compliment. I want to compliment Commissioner Leonard. This was his idea, and these kinds of results in terms of reductions of up to 71% of recidivism between 300 and 400 folks, top offenders is, I mean, that's amazing, groundbreaking results. So thank you for your good idea. Jeff and Ty and others, thanks for your contribution to this and making it work. Aye.
Leonard.
I was at a public safety forum last evening in East Portland, and there was quite a panel there that included District Court Judge Jones, and I hope I don't inaccurately describe what he said, but the gist of it